Okay, moving right along. My name is John Chu. Company is Gilead. Any of you have stocks in Gilead? I think it hit another all-time high now this morning. Megan, is that the case? You haven't checked. We check that constantly these days. About 2 years ago, I did a pipeline panel vendor session, and see, I don't believe in introducing people using bios, so because you can all read yourself. So I typically kind of have a little bit of personal touch, if you don't mind, William. So, okay, William Hayes, he and I go back more than 10 years. And then I was talking to him earlier at the breakfast today. So I'm not too sure whether I know it's not repeat. I know it's not quadrupeat, but at least it's a three-peat for his presence within the SLA community. And to me, he's a legendary visionary. And Deb, I'm going to use some of your words. Legendary visionary leader in optimal use of information management tools and also redefining the role of libraries and librarians. And this is basically a biogenetic, that's my opinion. And among other things he has done is to be able to mentor a lot of great people, such as Katja Mantrova. You may recall she presented at NAPA, those of you at NAPA SLA, and also Phoebe Roberts, who went to Pfizer, and she's the recognized, probably one of the most accomplished librarian expert in Lingomatics I2E. Would you agree to that?
I absolutely.
Okay. So my just quickly closing, I'm going to use Deb's word. Take risks, be proactive, get out of your comfort zone, and get into bioinformatics because that's the wave of the future. William, please.
Thank you. And you're way too kind. You may want to shut off the front mic. Way too kind. We all have problems to solve, and I've had a lot of fun trying to figure out which problems are the most important at my various companies and my various opportunities. And if you've looked at the summary, it has almost nothing to do with what I'm talking about. I'm sorry, I've revamped a lot. One of the things that I'd like to go over is in pharma, and actually, big data has become a huge buzzword. Everybody's jumping on the big data bandwagon, and everybody's trying to figure out how they fit into big data. The great thing in the biopharma and bio space is we don't have a big data problem. How many of you are working with 100 terabyte and above databases? Petabyte, anybody working? Does anybody know of any 100 terabyte plus databases in the pharma space? Okay. If you do, please enlighten me because I haven't seen them yet. There is an opportunity if we can actually get access to patient data. That is a big data problem. But with HIPAA and the other privacy concerns, getting access to that, aggregating it into a format that's usable, that has enough information that is useful, essentially de-anonymizes it. So it's going to be a while before we see that as something that we can really work with. And the great thing is, in pharma, the big data problem is a problem with data, a huge problem with data, but it's one that you are well set to help with and deliver on the promise of that data. Just some background so you have some idea of what my biases are, because I am highly opinionated, and as well as some disclosures as well. So you know, okay, is he pushing an agenda for commercial interests? And absolutely, I will be. So catch me on it. Everything should go through your filter, and that's your value, is knowing how to filter, extract, and transform and deliver useful information that has those biases reduced, hopefully eliminated, and delivers the key pieces of information that people need. So this is your first test. I'm an aerospace engineer, so if I say it's not rocket science, I actually know it's not rocket science. And if you want to build any jet engines, come see me as well. I defected to bioinformatics because biotech, I mean, what can be better than machines that build themselves? I mean, that is power. That is an amazing amount of power. Von Neumann machines kind of hinted at that, but biology's been doing it for a long time. Biopharma, bioinformatics, and text analytics. I've spent about 15 years now in that space. I used to run the Biogenetic Library and Literature Informatics team. I was hired there because of my expertise in bioinformatics and text analytics, and really the goal was to really shift the focus and what we could deliver in the enterprise. Katja Mantrova is now running it, and I am very pleased to see that and what she's doing. I am currently the head of platform development, so I went from being in biopharma to delivering tools and services and technology into biopharma, and I'm enjoying it a lot. I think we're on the cusp of making some huge changes to how we diagnose diseases and how we determine what drugs will treat people. And while at Biogenidec, I was really frustrated with the book catalog, so I kind of broke down at one point and decided that we would build one. And I got an external partner to do the heavy lifting. I thought it was going to be easier than it was, but it wasn't. So feel free to talk to me about that later. Katja Mantrova came up, she had an idea. And after I left to Biogenidec, we turned that idea into a small data service called DrugWrite Docs. But moving on, so the interesting thing about big data and all this hype is how well it's focused people's attention on the value of data and the issues in achieving that value. And most importantly in pharma, like I said, we don't have big data problems. We have a big problem with a lot of small databases that we have to figure out how to navigate and incorporate together and integrate. And it's not easy. The data sets are really complex. They're rapidly changing. There's a huge number of them. And this is where your sweet spot is, figuring out what data is available, how it should be accessed, managed, pulled together, transformed, and delivered to the users. So one interesting trend, and actually, Tim, if you could, just give me a 20 minutes before the end so I make sure I don't overflow too much. One interesting thing is information access now is practically free. I'm not saying it doesn't cost money. What I'm saying is it doesn't cost time. If you want access to information, if you want a journal article, remember the days that if you didn't have it in your library as a paper article, it would take days, weeks, months, never to get it. Okay. Since in the last 4 to 5 years, that's turned into seconds, minutes, at most a day or so to get a journal article if you don't already have access to it in a digital format. Books, the same way. Who here has, the reason that we managed a book library on site is because you might not be able to get that book. You know, it went through a printing. Who here has tried to get a book, but it wasn't available because it wasn't in a current printing? Actually not that many. I'm kind of surprised. I have, and I didn't think. Things have changed very rapidly. Now, with print on demand, things don't hardly ever go out of print. So accessing a book really shouldn't be a heavy-duty exercise. Managing books really shouldn't be a heavy-duty exercise. And you kind of see that because libraries, physical collections of books have been disappearing from the enterprise. And it doesn't mean that digital books and e-books have taken over, because they haven't. We don't have a good DRM capability now for the enterprise. So books are still valuable, but nobody sees the value of keeping a store of books because you can't get it if you don't already have it. So a lot of the issues of managing data and accessing data have gone away. There's still a lot of value in portfolio management, and that has gotten both complicated and easier. Portfolio management now means figuring out which electronic resources you're going to be able to provide through your website and how much you can afford. And both with the free, paid, in between, and diminishing budgets in some cases, figuring out where you want to spend your money and how you're going to get the best bang for the buck is a more complex exercise, but it's still not a huge effort because dollars only go so far. Information integration, given the greatly expanding number of databases, is also getting much, much harder. And it's a rabbit hole that we can disappear into and spend years and get almost no value. So the trick is figuring out how much integration is critical and to do ahead of time and how much you can do on the fly. And most importantly, our value is figuring out how to filter, extract, transform, and deliver exactly the piece of knowledge that is required for the for our business in order to push it forward. And we see a lot more sophistication in information delivery, but that information delivery is also hard. A lot of it's cutting edge, and there aren't any, there's Bizint and a few other packages that help you in certain ways, but they're packaged, and they kind of guide you on rails so that you can do what they allow you to do. And we really need to get past that. We need to become much more agile, talking about our previous SLI theme. And just as kind of an example of that, D3.js is a JavaScript library that provides incredible visualizations of data, which can really focus your customers on exactly the information they need, how they need it in a highly consumable format. However, it requires developer expertise. And that's why we need to partner. We need to actually have diverse teams. We need to collaborate a lot more and pull the different types of expertise. Knowing what data is there, knowing how to pull it together, knowing how to visualize it, and the programming expertise to kind of automate a lot of that so that we're not spending all of our time building documents from manually. So kind of the overall information workflow is really about collecting and acquiring content, which I think we've been incredibly successful in, and now it's almost a non-issue. Managing data, again, we've been really successful, and this is almost a non-issue. Integration, that is, danger ahead. If you focus on, let's figure out how to integrate all the data, one, it's kind of a megalomaniacal, and I will never say that correctly, idea that we can integrate every piece of data in such a way that we can use it however, whenever, whatever we need it. What I recommend is knowing what should be integrated and being able to integrate that in an agile fashion and do it in a targeted fashion as well. It's not that inside the enterprise, we want to be able to pull from the different databases that we have, both commercially and freely available, and put those together in ways that are highly useful. And we'll talk about that later as well. And filtering, analyzing. So you notice I don't say search. So search is there, it's part of filtering, but it's just part of filtering. It's knowing what data sets to pull together, how to search them, how to filter out the bits and pieces that you need, integrate only parts of the different records into a whole that is then useful. And it's not, and it's really getting away from the concept of, okay, I did a search and I did a really well-crafted search that used all the keywords and the manually annotated subject headings, and now I have only 200 articles that I'm giving over to the user. My last experience with that, and it was before I took over library, but it was highly informative. One of my colleagues said, yeah, I used to ask for information from the library, but then they gave me a whole bunch of abstracts, and then I had to read through them, and yeah, I had no interest whatsoever in doing that. When I asked for a piece of information, I wanted the information. When I took over a library, I was, one of my colleagues and I butted heads quite a lot, and it took me a while for us to understand why we were butting heads. Who here was taught that you don't transform information when you deliver it to the customer? You guide them, you point them to the right resources, you give them the resources, and they understand it, they transform it, they put their own biases on top of it. Is that what you were taught in or not? No? Okay. Well, good. Because that way lies danger. If you're not delivering added value in what you're delivering, then it's not an ethical situation. It's a, you're not delivering what the business needs, and it's a unemployment situation as well, and potentially a loss of company situation. We really have to focus on capturing these massive number of databases, pulling them together, transforming the information in a way that is highly consumable. And if possible, delivering it in a format that can be reused, and I'll touch on that later as well. Kind of a preface for something I'll talk about later, but smart data. Smart data is a term coined by Lee Feigenbaum at Cambridge Semantics, or at least I think he did. It's the first reference I could find. And the concept of smart data is data that knows about itself. And you guys are masters of this. You know about metadata and the value of metadata. And smart data is data that has metadata. And it's not just I have an item of information in a column. So EGFR. What, anybody know what EGFR means? Okay. Anybody care to shout out? Tim? It's a receptor, epidermal growth factor receptor. Now, you know that because you're in the pharma space. But it's not smart data, it's dumb data. It could be EGFR, epidermal growth factor receptor. Is it a gene? Is it a protein? Or it could be something entirely different. What we want is data that knows what it is. And if it knows what it is, you can reuse it. And you can pull it together and integrate it much more effectively. So Human Gene Nomenclature Committee, EGFR, refers to a very, very specific thing, and we know exactly what the semantics of that thing is. And in this case, we know that it's a gene, and it's a gene that can be transformed into a protein that's a cell surface receptor for epidermal growth factor. But EGFR doesn't tell us anything. Smart data tells us a lot about what that is, and it doesn't require context, and you can use it outside the context. So as soon as you take EGFR out of your database, what is it? One of the things that I've been trying to do as much as possible is shift from kind of managing, collecting data towards the knowledge end of provisioning data, delivering data. And the other thing that I've been trying to do as much as possible is working on going from being a deliverer of dumb data to a deliverer of smart data. And you can kind of see, I put where I fit in the different years of my career. In 2000, I was much more kind of in between data knowledge, but really delivering a lot of dumb databases, dumb data databases. In 2011, we were doing better as far as the dumb to smart data, and we were doing a lot better in delivering knowledge to our customers. In my current company, we're doing really well in delivering knowledge that's smart. And I'll talk a little bit about that in OpenBell. Now, there's an extra axion here that I went from being really good here at Biogen IDEC to being really bad here, and that's automation. All of this up here is very manual at this point, and we're working on automating that because we have too much data not to be superhuman in how we analyze and deliver, pull that information together and deliver it. And I didn't want to go three axes because that gets hard to visualize, but I'm hoping that we're all up here and we're also at the top of the curve on automation as well, because your goal is to be data jockeys that deliver knowledge. And you can't be a data jockey if you're trying to manually pull together 10,000 items from 400 different databases. And that whole image that's up there that Deb had on our background where somebody's manipulating, and I think we've all seen those images, that's where we want to be. We want to be able to quickly, easily, agilely manipulate data into knowledge. So my grand challenge number one, we have an inordinate number of databases accessible to us. I have no idea what's in most of them. I've asked Elsevier and Thompson to provide me a resource that would say, okay, these fields are in these databases and these items link between the databases just for their own products. Because Thomson, as you can tell, has over 250 different database and information products. Elsevier has over 65. Who here knows what's in all of those? Okay, well, I would be highly impressed and want to hire you pretty much immediately if you did. The Nucleic Acids Research Database and their database collection has 1,380 as of a few days ago. And that's kind of a whole bunch of different biologically oriented databases. Now, my expectation is there's very little overlap between the Thomson Reuters, Elsevier databases and the ones that are in the NIR database. Now, the Metabase and the NIR database, there's probably a lot of overlap. Kind of hard to tell, and that's kind of sad because as data jockeys, we should be able to figure that out pretty much instantly. But these are all databases that talk about other databases and tell you what they're about, but they don't tell you what's in them, and they don't tell you how they link together. Just a moment. So, and there's no sound. That's too bad. Because this is a really cool. Let me see if I can do that again. Yep. So, sadly, I had my son work a long time to put that together. It's like, I want something that kind of da. And this is the reason I'm not allowed to name products. You see proof of why I'm not ever allowed to name products. I'll turn off the. So, Semantic Indexicus Databasicus. That is an idea that we have a database of databases, a database that indicates what the semantic types, the fields that are in those databases are, how they link together, and also the ability to pathfind. And I'll talk a little bit about pathfinding across those as well. But we need to have an index that tells us what's where. And when we have a question, we need to be able to map from that question to which databases do we go? How do we integrate them? What bits and pieces do we pull from one to another to build the information, the knowledge that is required by our business? And I think we've all seen this. Hopefully everybody's seen this, the Linked Data Cloud, kind of centered or anchored by DBpedia, which is a database, semantic database version of Wikipedia. Now, this is a fantastic piece of work. However, you have no idea if the databases are actually up to date, how well mapped they are, and it's a really, really heavy-duty exercise to put this together, to use it, and to keep it up to date. And it's something that we need to do, and we are going to continue doing it. But until we get there, until we get this, we pretty much need to have a much simpler database. And you guys are exactly the right people to do this, and that's why I'm proposing it to you as a grand challenge, of pulling together the different databases, what fields are associated with those databases, which fields link from one database to another database, so that you can actually start doing this pathfinding of, okay, well, I have some compounds over here in PubChem. Which compounds are actually being used in clinical trials currently? And, you know, in my internal database X, How does this map together? Or starting from internal database X, I need to figure out, which adverse events are associated with particular compounds, or what tool compounds are available. And we don't have a good way of doing this. And you know, a lot of your careers are built on knowing a small subset of databases really, really well, knowing how to search them, pull information out of them, and integrate it together. But you're not scalable enough. We need to be able to scale this much, much further. And again, it's coming from being kind of the local expert. You have a niche and you're working it very well. And that works out well for a business analyst that's in a particular part of the business, where, like in the marketing department, there's a handful of databases that a business analyst in the marketing department really needs to have, and they can learn them. Your value is having access to everything and knowing how to put it together. And this tool, service, system would help you get there and be much more effective at delivering on that vision. So grand challenge number one, let's build a database of databases that has all the metadata required to figure out how to do our jobs. I would have loved to have some really concrete examples of, you know, 5 to 10 concrete examples of where you really have to have this in-depth knowledge and you can put it together into some really interesting things. And I would love to talk to you over coffee or drinks tonight and come up with those. You probably already have them in your head as examples. There's nothing done here. This is all vision. It's all an idea. Maybe we can realize it. It's not something that we can get from Elsevier, most likely, or Thomson, because it really needs to be across all of them. And if we're all working together, we'll have insight into the different databases and can hopefully extract out the pieces in a license-compliant way to put this together. Yes, there are challenges, and the challenges are usually social, not technical. Grand challenge number two. We are really close to having not just a $1,000 genome, but a $100 genome. You know, who here would not have their entire family sequenced for $100 a piece? And as soon as we have that and a way to utilize it, you know, my entire family will be sequenced so that we can have an insight in what we need to watch out for and be careful. And my genetic history is my family has melanoma cancer that runs and other cancers that run very significantly in my family. I know to watch out for that. What else should I be watching out for? The problem with this cheap genome is it costs a lot to understand it. And again, this is where our opportunity lies in being able to help our business figure out all of these. This is not really a big data problem until we get everybody in the U.S. Sequenced, but it is a big problem with data. What information we want to put together, and that information, the database has changed so fast that nobody can keep up. No one person can keep up. No one small team can keep up. Novartis, Joseph Jimenez, the CEO of Novartis, was very explicit in, 10 years ago, they put a bet that they're going to focus on developing drugs for specific pathway mechanisms. Thanks, John, for prompting that. That was fantastic. It works in really well here. And blockbusters are being redefined. Instead of, I'm developing a big drug that does one thing and it makes billions of dollars, it's really now about a portfolio of drugs and a portfolio of diseases per drug. And the drug industry is really heading towards more of a petite drug market. And the more we get into patient stratification, kicking and screaming, though the farmers are being dragged in that direction, the more success we're going to have in developing drugs. Almost every drug that gets into phase 3 clinical trials is useful for somebody. It's just not useful across the board without knowing who those somebodies are. And while I was at Biogen IDEC, I was incredibly frustrated. We were doing really well at, you know, kind of reducing operational overhead, managing and acquiring and delivering data to the enterprise. We were doing really well at transforming information into knowledge and delivering it, in a easily consumable format. And we were also doing really well at automating it. But I was delivering it in Excel spreadsheets, which were completely dead end for knowledge. Here's a spreadsheet, great, this is, you know, and here's some visualization products that will sit on top of that and go have fun, and that is completely unreusable. We couldn't repurpose it. It was pretty much a one-shot deal. Super frustrated about this because we were generating so much really useful knowledge, but it was all dead-ended. Who here actually has a really good knowledge delivery, knowledge base capability in their organization? Okay. Well, I guess we're all sharing that pain, and we're all sharing that frustration. Every time you deliver an information result, a knowledge result to a customer, it's like, yeah, I'd love to reuse that again, but it's going to go into a share drive and never be seen again. So the next grand challenge is, let's figure out how to pull that information out, generate knowledge that's repurposable. And here I'm talking about biological knowledge. So biological, chemobiological knowledge. And you know, full disclosure, my company has open sourced this language to make it much more freely available, and with the understanding that the more information we all have, the higher everybody's boat will float. So we do have a commercial interest in this, but it's been open source, it's done, it's out in the open source domain. Anybody can use it, and we hope everybody uses it. But it provides a way of expressing biology that is computable, is repurposable, it's databaseable. You can put it into a knowledge base and actually access it again, and access it with enough information that you can put it into different information products. So here you're looking at a couple of examples where somebody states something in the literature. And this is another reason why this was almost perfectly designed for SLA members. The information service is one of the few that has critical mass to be able to take this challenge on and build a central knowledge base, most likely in combination with the bioinformatics, perfect, bioinformatics individuals in your company. I won't say teams or groups anymore, because as I used to be part of bioinformatics, we were a little too narrowly focused on, hey, let's build software, and not so much on, hey, let's build strategic value in the business. And there are very few bioinformatics teams left in the biopharma space, and they're much, much smaller than they used to be. But they're still good partners to work with on this. But they don't have the expertise in curating knowledge. They're usually much more focused on running analyses, using software, and building software. And the whole concept of curating, building knowledge bases, and figuring out how to deliver those effectively to their customers isn't their strong suit, but it is yours. And the service, the amazing dedication to service and helping others that I've seen in the librarian space is beyond that of any other group that I've seen in business. So you guys are it. And if you don't do it, it's probably not going to happen, at least not in the enterprise. And that's where, and having the domain knowledge and having the business understanding is why we have to have an information service to provide these capabilities. And not just this, not just the database of databases, but the delivery of knowledge to the business so that it is successful. So here you're seeing pulling information out of the literature, and it was completely designed to present things from the literature. It's not designed as a quantitative systems biology language. It's designed to capture qualitative ideas from the literature and put those into a format that can be easily accessed. So here, RNA expression of RBL2 is directly mediated via activation of the FOXO3 transcription factor. That turns into this kind of, it's very similar to chemical reaction language. The transcriptional activation of the protein abundance of FOXO3 directly increases the mRNA RBL2. And that's a very succinct expression that we can easily integrate into a network graph. And a Bell statement is a subject, predicate, object. So it's a one thing does something else to something else. And that's a very simple construct. And the other nice thing about this is you can put small mini documents together into a large network and into a large knowledge base. You don't have to build everything from scratch. You can take some from Thomson Reuters, some from Elsevier, some from open source, and build your own. And it's the building your own that really kind of polishes up the information that's really needed inside the enterprise. Almost everything that we did when we were doing text analytics, text mining at Biogen IDEC wasn't building a huge database. It was taking a database that somebody else had built and decorating it, enhancing it, putting the specific information we needed for our particular areas of interest, our business, onto it that made it incredibly valuable. And here you see the abundance of the chemical compound corticosteroid blocks, not directly, but blocks the biological process of tissue damage. And the most important thing is these statements are contextualized. You know, what tissue, cell line, disease, and most importantly, what the evidence is and what the citation, the literature that backs this up is. Because, you know, biology is dirty. And it's often wrong. It's often published wrong. So being able to go back to the original source and say, this was wrong. or look at two different statements that say completely conflicting things and understanding it's the context behind them that actually informs why they're different. It's like, okay, now we've built this great database, this great knowledge base. Now what do we do with it? How do we access it? And I'm not saying we should put a whole bunch of data in that we can't then get out. The goal is, I'm going to show you one example of the CAM Navigator that works with Cytoscape. Has anybody here, anybody familiar with Cytoscape? It's a network visualization tool. Some of you. So network visualization, that's where you have a node, edge, node. And we saw an example of that before in that database of databases where you saw PubChem is related to, drug bank is related to clinicaltrials.gov. More and more, our knowledge is a graph. And that graph makes it much easier to traverse it, to understand it, and to navigate as well. And Cytoscape is a tool that helps you visualize that graph, as well as browse and extract and build sub-graphs, sub-knowledge networks that you can then hand off. So we have this big knowledge base, but nobody's going to use 500,000 statements all at once. What they're going to do is, I'm interested in how does multiple sclerosis interact with glial cells? And from that, you'll start with multiple sclerosis or glial cells, and then you'll start building up a knowledge network that you then hand off to your biologist or chemist so that they can figure out which targets to focus on as well as what compounds to work with. And this is a kind of another example where you see the graph, and you see here we're actually opening up, kind of expanding the network around one node in that graph in a very consistent and easy fashion. So where can we use Bell in biopharma? And some of these also relate very well to bio, the medical community as well. Sorry, I have a very strong focus on pharma R&D. Library services, developing disease biology understanding, mechanism of action, toxicology. If you have a toxicology question, why is that showing up? And we used to do a lot of those when I was at Biogen IDEC. We're seeing an adverse event. We're not sure why. Could you help us figure out what's going on here as far as the biology of this? We would do it, give them an Excel spreadsheet with some Lingomatics results as well as some other network visualizations, and that was it. Now we can actually do it. We put that information into the knowledge base. We combine it with what's there. We pull out more because we already have more that's in the knowledge base, and we can much more quickly get to a more informed understanding of why we're seeing that particular adverse event. And there's a whole bunch of other ways that you can use it. And here are some exemplar starting questions. I put these into the slides and they'll be redistributed to you after my talk. I'll send them over to Tim so he can post them. So just think of this as kind of starting points and ideas to start generating ideas on how you could use this. Because I've only put up a handful, and the ones that were things that I knew about from before, there are, biology is complex. So please go to OpenBell. Notice the one L, biological expression language, and take a look and think about how we can start building a Uber database of knowledge, an Uber knowledge base of biology that we can all take advantage of. And I'd also like to say that I'm very happy that after years of being in production in Biogen IDEC, we've now The book catalog is now available to anybody that wants to use it. You can go online, get a free version of it, and it's a commercial enterprise so that it stays afloat and keeps progressing, as well as the idea that Katya Mantrova had of pulling together all the FDA and EMA documents together and making those available. And that is also available. And you can talk to Ryan. I think we'll have our first joint project there. So, questions?
Can I start with one? is Andreas here from Thomson Reuters? Andreas?
Okay, so I was struck, you know, CE course yesterday. You have 45 PhD and 5 MDs manually curating MetaCore content, correct? So, and then Tim, you're here, Elsevier. So what's the likelihood of these two big vendors adopting BEL?
Oh, was the question to me? I mean, a lot of this depends on how you mean by adopting. I mean, from our perspective, we've talked, as you know, I mean, we've talked from the publication standpoint about working with this, and it's really going to be, as always, is going to be market driven. I mean, we would look probably with a different lenses on the databases themselves and on the publications, but when you look at things like eTrix coming along and other initiatives, if Bell is the way to go, then again, it's going to be market driven. I think we agree that everything needs to be about the simplification. We're all aligned that the simplification of data and getting the data to the researchers who can actually use it to cure the disease, it's in everybody's best interest.
Yeah, so. And I'm not saying that Bell is it or Bell is the only option. Right now, as far as I can tell, it's the only option, but the most important thing is that we build a biological knowledge base that we can actually use. And if Bell isn't it, let's figure out what it is.
So I'll echo a lot of that sentiment. We've been working with Ted Slater since...
Who's the CIO of the CTO of the Bell organization.
And the chief cheerleader of the Bell organization. And we've been talking to Ted since Open Bell started, even before Open Bell started, to be fair. And again, it's market-driven. I will definitely have beers with William and argue the RDF versus Open Bell representation of biological language, and I know we can talk
Open
about
Bell
that.
Open Bell is RDFable. Yep.
Awesome. And we've actually worked with customers. So Pfizer, for example, has taken the Metabase database and converted it into OpenBell. So we're open to it. In general, as I'll talk about later, I want to make my data accessible to people and by any means necessary. So I have a question about the database of databases. In order for that to really work, every database has to be self-describing, right?
Because or we describe it.
Okay, but if I have... Especially with the...
It would be great if you provided a self-describing database.
Right, so kind of like a WSDL, but something that would work a little bit better than a WSDL. But that basic premise.
Yep.
So if I'm... So you talked about all the databases that are in the nucleic acids research. A lot of those are, hey, I did a postdoc, and I built a database, and it's a Linux box under my desk that will get repurposed once I go off and find my fame and fortune.
Yep.
So I think one of the challenges of a database of databases is, A, I think they need to be self-describing. Otherwise... the project is going to be too big, in my opinion. And what you showed with open link data, I think, is a good way of going about describing those data sets and almost having crawlers that say, tell me if there are any new databases out there. And if so, please describe yourself in this way. And if that worked in Bell, that'd be fine. As long as there's some way of describing those different data sources, especially as they change. Mm-hmm. So, hey, I have a new field now. And now you can ask a different question because hopefully data providers will continue to change things. Sorry, I'll stop.
And that's the end point that I hope we get to. But we have to start.
Alex, how many? Like two more questions?
We actually don't have time for any more questions. If you have any questions,
please see me.